Okay, so basically I'll do both then, just, okay.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Oil and Gas Committee. I'd like to thank you for inviting me to stand before you to discuss my possible confirmation as commissioner of the AOGCC. It was 5 years ago that I came before the legislature for my first confirmation hearing, and at the time I said that the state has become my home. It's become very good to me. I wanted to give something back to the state, and that was by serving the people as one of the leaders of the Conservation Commission in protecting the people's interest in oil and gas resources. I still have that same attitude. I'd like to continue on for another 6 years. I don't know if it's going to be more than 6 years, but at least the next 6 years I'd like to continue on as commissioner. And in your packets, I have included, I believe, my resume that you can peruse at your own convenience. As far as what we do and what we've accomplished, I've got a presentation prepared if you would like me to continue with that later, or if you'd like to ask me questions about my qualifications at this time.
Excuse me for interrupting. I failed to announce that the meeting has been called to order, and it did convene at 5:03 p.m. I'm Vic Korn, the chairman, and we have with us Representatives Roper, Dahlstrom, Samuels, and Curtula. So I apologize for that oversight. So, Dan, go ahead and continue.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, would you like to wait for the projector, or should I just start
go ahead
going?
And continue.
Okay. If you'll look at the big slide package in the packet, you'll see the very first slide has says Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and it has a picture of an oil field. That is Alpine Oil Field. It is one of the newest and latest in the technological advances in the oil field, which has a very small footprint, and it produces from a very large area. There's about 100 acres on two pads out there that access over 20,000 acres of oil production. Some of these wells go as far as 4 miles out.
Can I get you to turn your laptop off, please?
Could I get a copy of the slides, please? Okay, now, the reason I'm talking about this very small footprint in this very large area is the AOGCC basically has nothing to do with the surface in most cases. We worry about what goes on in those 22,000 acres that are accessed by these high horizontally reaching well bores. Okay, if we go to the next page, it's page one, we have a mission statement. Our mission is to protect the public interest in oil and gas resources. And that's what our mission has been for years. Recently, we've added, and to protect underground supplies of drinking water. We've always done that, and we were remiss in not putting that into our mission. But that is probably at least equal to our most important part of the mission, is protecting people's underground sources of drinking water. Okay, if you turn the page, we've got an agenda there. I'm not sure that, Mr. Chairman, that we're going to be able to get through all of it unless you want me to. There's quite a bit to cover there. I'd at least like to tell the committee what our oversight is, who we work for, how we're organized, since the budget has been a subject recently. Our goals, services, and strategies, and something about activity. There hasn't been too much exploration activity in the state recently, and some people said, well, you guys must not be very busy, but we're extremely busy. Permitting is at an all-time high, and I'll show you some data to support that. Now, the next part of it was some major issues. The gas line oversight. In 2 days, the commission is going to be holding probably its most important hearings in the last 20 years, and that is to look at the issue of potential waste due to the gas line project. And we may not have time to get into that, but I'm always willing to come back and discuss that at some later time. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was offshore Cook Inlet Future, and that would concern what are we going to do with the platforms? Are we going to throw them away, or are we going to go after some added some resources that will probably never be accessible unless we preserve some of those platforms right. for a while?
Exactly. Yes. Samuels. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, one question on that gas line oversight. How do you make the determination on what would be an acceptable loss of potential oil production in order to get a project going? It's not really a geological question. If you just come and say, here's the number, we're going to have to give up so many 100 million barrels or how many barrels of oil we're willing to give up in order to get the gas, it's more of a political question than a geological question. How do you determine that? And is that something that's going to be in your hearings that you have a say in?
Okay. Through the chair. Yeah. The first step we're going to take is do an analysis and see just is there going to be waste, and if there is, how much of it? And then we're going to have to decide what are we going to do about it. And, you know, ultimately the decision rests in the legislature's hands because you represent the people. I doubt that you would accept a lot of waste. For one thing, that, you know, this is a national issue here, and it would go against conservation acts throughout the rest of the country that have been accepted. But I feel intuitively that any kind of problems as far as waste will be, I think there'll be mitigation measures that will protect us from that. And you know, the time it takes to get a gas line on and running, by then a lot of these big waste fears are gonna be getting smaller.
But at the end of the day, there's going to be a trade-off, and you'll come up with a recommendation, or do you come up with numbers saying this is how much we're going to leave in the ground by taking this much gas off, and realizing that technology is going to decrease that number? But just, I'm talking about the process. Do you come up with a recommendation, or do you just tell the legislature we're going to give up X amount of oil if we want to have X amount of gas, and that to the best of our geological knowledge, that's the trade-off, and the legislature decides from there, process-wise?
By statute, we're going to say you can't produce any more gas at this rate. And then I believe it would be, if that's not acceptable to the people of this state, they can change the law. But right now, we have to rule on what an acceptable production rate is.
So the AOGCC determines
yes.
the number. Okay, thank you.
President Roper.
Mr. Chairman, just a very simple question. When you refer to waste, what are we wasting? I think we're wasting the gas or the oil or both, or is... So when you use the term waste, what are you referring to?
Under the present plan of producing gas, we would be wasting liquids, oil and natural gas liquids.
Okay.
And that waste could be up into the hundreds of millions of barrels, the same amount as you'd have in an alpine field, something that industry is looking for right now.
It's those elements we transport over the TAPS line currently, those petroleum
Correct.
Products.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, yes,
Chairman.
Sir.
Mr. Seema, could you tell the committee what you think the time frame will be needed to do the study?
Through the chair, Representative Rochberg, yes, we're looking at, if AOGCC does the study independently, it would be probably 3 years. And that's one of the reasons we've asked to have the supplemental fast-tracked. That would be, in the Senate, it's SB 98, I believe, and it's $1.2 million. And we would start our own independent study. We would prefer to have industry do the study and us look over their shoulders, but there appear to be some sorts of confidentiality issues that are kind of stretching things out. And if we want to get this done and not be the bottleneck, or as our chair, John Norman, says, we don't want to be the skunk at the garden party, we need to get this analysis done as quickly as possible.
Commissioner Turner, And how do we do that? By looking over shoulders? Or
industry has dozens and dozens of geologists and engineers. They're highly qualified. They've got the software. They've got the equipment where they can do these studies, and I assume that they will do this analysis on their own. If we could be partners with them through this analysis, not have any real secrets as far as conservation issues are concerned, and be able to and hopefully be able to relay this information to the public and to the legislature, that'd probably be the most efficient way to do it. But understandably, that there are partners involved and lawyers involved, and you know, information that goes out has to be sanctioned. And I see that as too much of a roadblock to, or a probable roadblock to us working together.
But Mr. Chairman, it would be much quicker to do it that way, do you think, than 3 years?
I think it would probably be about the same amount of time.
Oh.
If we had complete, cooperation with them? It would be longer than that if the present type of cooperation exists, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, if I might follow up, just to make it absolutely clear, then you indicated there would be research and mitigating measures taken, you believe, in the course of this study and or recommendations by your commission. I guess my concern is how the 3-year fits into any kind of accelerated project commitments or sanctioning for the gas line itself. And would you assume that you would make the study and that the project could go forward, notwithstanding whatever conclusions you may reach, or is there a chicken and egg situation here?
Yeah, theoretically it's possible we would make a ruling that said that they can't, I mean, the gas rates talked about are not approvable, and that there may be a problem there. But intuitively, I think that things are going to be okay, but, I mean, we have to prove it to the people before we make a decision.
Would you make that ruling earlier, or would you have to wait 3 years to do so? Or would you have an interim-type ruling and then review it to have it studied by the come to conclusions from the study itself, or how would that work?
Through the chair, Representative Rochberg, I hadn't really thought that deeply into it. It'd be difficult to answer that question, but I think an interim decision would be possible. I mean, if we see which way this thing's heading, then yeah, we could put up some warnings.
I wanted to announce that we're going to have to expedite this somewhat, since we have one member that has to leave at 5:30 and two others no later than 6 for the key campaign function, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, do this, but I guess I'd suggest perhaps.
And I wasn't rushing you, sir.
No. I understand. Anyway. I understand. This is a very important issue, though. But maybe if you hadn't thought about it, maybe you should start thinking about it. And perhaps Representative Samuels can make a suggestion about how we can communicate with the commission over this issue. Anyway, in the future.
Any comments, Representative Samuels?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I follow the concerns that if you don't rule for 3 years, is anybody going to be willing to start doing anything from now, 3 years from now, just counting on you saying you can do anything at all when you might come out and say there's too much waste to do anything but 3B, and 3B doesn't pay the bills?
Well, that is the purpose. We are starting on Thursday with this process, and we will have a lot more information to tell you after this hearing on Thursday and probably Friday. I mean, I'm more than welcome to come back, stand before this committee, and discuss it some more.
Dan, since our conversation here is in part a confirmation of yourself, I want to make sure that certain basic questions are asked of you before we conclude this process. Number one, I'd like to know why you're seeking this position. And number two, I'd like to know what some of your goals are as a member of the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Could you answer those, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm seeking this commission this position, as I said before, because I want to continue this extremely challenging, exciting job serving the people of the state. There is a lot to do. Permits are an all-time high. We've got this very important issue of conservation concerning the gas pipeline. We are in a process of facilitating expanded statewide exploration and development, including NPRA and exploration licensing areas that are outside Cook Inlet and the North Slope. I think there's a real exciting time in the near future for the state, and I would like to be part of it. We are going electronic. We're putting together a website to where all of our information can be accessed anywhere from anywhere in the world by people that are interested in potentially investing in Alaska, and they can see what kind of great opportunities exist here without having to spend money and fly up here. So there's going to be a lot more investors taking a look at the state, I think, because of our accessibility through the website. We've got to maintain an active role in protecting Alaska's underground injection control program. And as I said earlier when I talked to you privately, that there is a bill out there that I don't know if there's a House version of it yet, but I think there is, where we're taking over responsibility from the EPA for certain types of injector wells, which will, by us taking over this responsibility, it'll help to streamline the permitting process, get some of these projects on board faster. We've got mature oil fields out there. The infrastructure is getting older. What do we do with it? I mean, do we take it away and you know, throw it in the Aleutian Trench like people are planning or are thinking of doing with our platforms, or can we do something with them to access resources of which, you know, 96% of the oil generated in Cook Inlet has never been found? Where'd that oil go? And we can use those platforms to look for that extra oil. We're also looking at waste from gas flaring. Alaska has one of the best records of not wasting gas due to flaring, but I think we can do better there. We can look closer at it. You know, in Alaska, the amount of gas flared is 0.2% of the gas produced, and you compare that to North Dakota, where the amount of gas flared is 5%, and they brag about that because they've got it down from 25%. We do much better. Our industry does much better here, but there's room for even more improvement. 0.2% of 8 BCF a day is a lot of gas.
Mm-hmm. I would add that we're working on one of the concepts that Dan, excuse me for interrupting, Dan, but I need to share this with the committee because we're working on a committee bill that would
be an incentive to encourage some of the deep well drilling in some of the deep geological zones that you had testified on at the recent hearing. And so we're working on that now. I wanted to bring that to the attention of the committee, and we'll be bringing that bill to you folks and getting your thoughts on that. But we'd like to encourage as much as we can further development of Cook Inlet in light of the declining production. Sorry for the interruption, sir. Go ahead.
Well, that's quite all right, Mr. Chairman. And finally, we're working on ways to increase AOGCC's efficiency. We're looking to reduce costs, and we have reduced costs by over $800,000 last year. I don't know if we can continue that kind of reduction, but I believe we can run the agency a bit cheaper than we have in the past. We're working on that, and I think it's exciting times, and that's why I'd like to continue to see this on for another 6 years at least.
Dan, what would you consider some of your highlights as far as accomplishments during your tenure there at the commission?
As I said before, the web-based dispersal of information worldwide was started in 2000, the year that I was appointed. We have decreased permit time to get a drilling permit has decreased from over 20 to 28 days. Now it's less than 10 days, and we think we're there now. We're at the point where we've streamlined the permitting process as much as we can.
Okay.
Those are a couple of my achievements.
All right. I wanted to make a personal observation. I've been working with Dan for the last several years since his appointment in 2000. At that time, you were a constituent, so I took special interest in you, and we've had a good relationship, and I've heard nothing but good about the man, and he comes highly recommended in the industry, and I see some heads nodding back there. So I know you're fair and you do a good job over there, so just my own personal observation to the committee.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
I don't know. I think I've covered most of the things.
Okay. Are there any questions from the committee members for Dan besides what I've asked? Make the man work for his money here. Representative Samuel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on the job in general, how much of your job is geologist and how much is administrator? I mean, does the staff do a lot of the legwork and hand the information off to you? And
One of the downsides of this job is I do very little geology anymore. I have to rely. We've got a couple of excellent geologists and about seven very good engineers, and we have to, you know, we see the work they do, we look at it, and if it looks reasonable, then we'll approve it, sign off on it. A lot of what is done is managerial. I mean, managerial expertise is very important in the job, I think.
In the course of your work over the last 5 years, have you come across any major irregularities in terms of your oversight, observations as to what's going on the North Slope, and ensuring that the state's in fact getting what we're supposed to? If there were, I would imagine it would have surfaced in the paper, and I haven't ever seen anything. But has anything come along that I perhaps don't recall?
Alaska's blessed and it has world-class operators. That's all I got to say. I come from the Rocky Mountains where you have hundreds of little mom-and-pop operators that you're always having to watch. I mean, one thing, these guys know how to operate in the oil field. So
I'm not implying that the industry is not being scrupulous in their operations. I'm just wondering if maybe you might have discovered something that, I don't know, you disagreed with as far as how they reported things.
Well, there's always going to be disagreements between us, and I haven't seen anything that's really been major. We've always got incident investigations going on right now. We've got about a dozen incidents we're investigating, but I don't think it's anything out of the ordinary, Mr. Chairman.
Good. That was the answer I expected, by the way, because I know the industry has been very responsible with that. But I was just curious, because that's your job, and I was just wondering what you might have observed over the years. Okay. If it's the will of the committee, I just assume conduct our formal business, get it done with, especially since Representative Samuels does have to leave here in just a few minutes, and basically formalize your confirmation from this committee. That doesn't mean you're officially confirmed, of course, because it still has to go through subsequent committee processes and then go to the floor for a final vote. So with that, unless there's any further questions or comments or observations, I would entertain a motion to, would that be proper, Charisse, a motion then to, for the Oil and Gas Committee to confirm the appointment of Mr. Dan Seamount to the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission for a term that expires 3/1/2011. Representative Roquefort.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee report to further jurisdictions the appointment of Mr. Dan Seamount of Anchorage to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and indicating that this does not reflect the intent of any member to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purpose of confirmation. So this is not an endorsement or okay. Otherwise.
Any objection to the motion just made by Representative Roquefort?
None.
Seeing none, congratulations, Dan. And with that, we'd like to have you continue with your presentation, and we'll just go as long as the committee would like to remain, and okay. I'll stay for the duration, so don't worry.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I won't take it wrong if anybody gets up and leaves, or if I start going on down a road that you've already been down. You can always interrupt me and tell me to move on. A lot of what I was going to talk about I've already discussed, so we've covered a lot of it, and so okay, moving right along. I brought two laser pointers, and I can't find either of them, so I'll just have to use this cursor here. These are the four main areas of oversight that the AOGCC has. Like I said before, it's mainly subsurface. It's a quasi-judicial state regulatory agency. We're not a resource agency. We are more of a judicial. We make decisions. Sometimes we have to make decisions when parties could be like the state against an oil company. So we have to stay independent in that regard. So the four main areas are we prevent physical waste of hydrocarbon resources, which is what we've been discussing when we're talking about the gas line project. We promote greater ultimate recovery, which is what we're talking about when we're worried about throwing these platforms away when only 4% of the oil has been found in Cook Inlet. It's extremely important that we protect fresh water, and we do that through our making sure that all well bores are drilled compliantly, and that of course was a big issue last year. People were worried that that coal bed methane was going to damage their water systems, yet the way these wells are constructed, the big worry isn't these gas wells. The big worry are these class 5 wells, these septic systems in people's backyards, and people just need to understand that. And finally, we protect correlative rights. Everybody has a right to drill their own lease if they own the property right or the oil and gas rights to it. This next slide is where do we fit in. I put this slide together years ago, and we've been adding to it. I hate the slide because it's so busy, but every commissioner that's come after me has liked it, so they've insisted I keep this in here. All it says is that we're regulatory. We're not so much into the economics of the situation, and we're subsurface. And you can look at this at your leisure and study the details on it. But it shows the differences between industry, the landowners such as DNR, DEC, and AOGCC. On the next slide, we talk about our oversight strategy. Our regulations are 28 AC 25 and statute title 31. For regulatory and adjudicatory duties, we have two reservoir engineers, two petroleum engineers, and two petroleum geologists, and they work on drilling permits, sundry permits, all of our decisions regarding orders, compliance reviews, and field studies. And the gas offtake would be considered a field study. And we have inspections. We police the oil fields when it comes to subsurface operations. We have one engineer and 5 on-site inspectors. We have 2 inspectors at all times on the North Slope. We have our inspection program is probably the most complete of any agency in the state, including OSHA. And we inspect well control equipment. We make sure that the meters are accurate so that the state can get its revenue. We make sure that the wells have integrity and that they're not going to leak and spill into other zones. We do equipment checks. Like I said before, we have 12 investigations going on. And at times we do other inspections when we have requests from the interested public.
Jim, I have a question for you. It always has struck me as being kind of unusual that this commission is so small. There's only 3 members. I know you guys are well qualified. You work hard. I wonder, in light of the pending expansion of the gas industry, oil and gas industry, which we all seem to be pushing, and which seems to be occurring, you did mention earlier that there's a greater number of permits that are being issued and so forth, would that necessitate, perhaps could be accomplished through hiring more staff to help you guys out, but would it necessitate having to expand that commission perhaps? Adding a 4th or 5th member?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure we need more commissioners. We may need more staff. And right. I hate to say that because, we just eliminated 4 positions last year, and now we've got a receptionist who also does accounting, and she's starting to make mistakes because she's disturbed all the time by having to do the reception duties and in fact, the other day, one of the senators called, Senator Dyson called, and no one returned his call for 7 or 8 hours. That was just totally unacceptable. So we may have to add some staff.
I would object to supporting that. As a conservative, limited government guy that's trying to reduce government, that would be one area that I think would be prudent to put some additional monies into and hire some additional staff.
One of our engineers also is just totally overloaded by these incident investigations, and we're thinking about hiring an investigator. What kind of investigator? Is he an ex-police detective who we teach oil and gas, or is he an oil and gas guy that we teach investigating? Maybe there's somebody out there that does that, and that would be great if we could get one of them.
Where does the commission fall in the government structure? What department is it in?
We're administered by the Department of Administration,
okay.
Mr. Chairman.
And did your budget involve any increase in monies this session? Because we had the closeout this afternoon right in this very room about 2 hours ago. Did that include any additional monies, did you notice?
I wasn't paying attention.
I'd be happy to follow through on that.
But I think we have money in there for a receptionist. I'm not sure if we could afford an investigator.
Yeah. I'll follow through on that and talk to Representative Holm, who chairs that, to see if there's any chance they could adjust their budget a little bit and direct some more monies in there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Okay, our principal clients are everybody. Individual Alaskans, industry, a number of state and federal government agencies, trade organizations, and other interested parties. We serve everybody, and that includes the environmental community. These next two slides show oil and gas operators and owners, and it used in the year 2000, I could put everybody on half of a page that had interest in Alaska, and now it takes two pages.
Right.
It's quadrupled, and these slides are already out of date. For example, Renaissance is not on this Cook Inlet owners and operators, and so every time I show that these two slides, they're not really right, but they give you an idea of how much interest has expanded in the state. Right now, we have two work sites, one in Anchorage, one in Dead Horse. We have two teams. As I said before, we have a west team that looks at Kuparik, offshore Cook Inlet, west Cook Inlet, and an east team that looks at Prudhoe Bay and the Kenai Peninsula. actually, there's been a well permitted for Copper River Basin and should be spudding within the next week. Very exciting.
Right.
And we have oversight over the entire state, everywhere except for Denali National Park. At your leisure, you can look at our organizational chart. This is pretty up to date for the time, and it shows how we're split up into teams and how our staff is allocated.
How many total staff are there in the organization? Is that it right there?
Yeah, I believe we have 27,
okay.
Mr. Chairman, and we have temporaries coming in and out at times.
Mm-hmm.
The next slide just shows how we're organized on the North Slope between the two teams. And the slide after that shows how we're organized on Cook Inlet. I've already described that to you. Okay, when we're looking at opportunities in Alaska, this map of the state showing Alaska oil and gas basins shows that the present production is on the North Slope around Prudhoe Bay and in Cook Inlet. And all the shaded areas are areas that have oil and gas potential. So I believe as an exploration geologist that there is a lot of oil left to be found in the state, a lot of oil and gas. Recently, DNR has opened up areas in Bristol Bay, which has active oil seeps remnant. It looks a lot like Cook Inlet. actually, the first oil field in Alaska was in the Gulf of Alaska. Chukchi Basin to the north has tremendous amounts of potential oil left to be found. Now, the next slide, I should I speed it up a bit, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Okay.
If we can conclude by, say, 6 o'clock, I think that would be a good goal to shoot for.
Okay.
Would that give you enough time to at least hit the highlights?
Okay. On the next slide, let's see, is it 2 slides, 3 slides? A lot, or those points are listed in the budget book, and it shows what our goals and strategies are for fiscal year 2006. And I've already gone over a lot of that when we were discussing, you know, what our role is on the North Slope Gas. So I won't go into that in any more detail. If you go to the really busy slide, AOGCC's primary services is a list of just about everything we do in detail. And at the top is hold hearings and open meetings. And we hold an open meeting about every week and about 16 hearings a year. The next slide, I think a lot of you have seen this one before, shows how technology's improved through time in Alaska, and how these well bores are getting more and more complex, and they're taking more of our time to evaluate. And if you look on the left, you see a vertical well drilled in the pre-70s, just drill well vertically, and that's what I was used to working in the Rockies, where you just drill straight down. And when I moved to Alaska, they asked me where I wanted to put it, and I just joked. I said, I want you to go 2 miles to the northwest, hang a right, and go 4 miles east-west. And they said, well, can we get it within 10? You want it within 10 feet? I said, can you do that? And they said, yeah. I said, you're lying to me, and they did it.
Wow.
It's just amazing what they can do in Alaska, and that's what the well bore on the right shows. You take these, they're doing multilateral well bores now, up to 4 well bores coming out, 5 well bores coming out of one what mother bore, and we're permitting more and more of those.
Right.
The next slide shows a map. Each one of those squares is a section. It's a mile on a side, and it shows that the whales are going up to 4 miles out, reaching out. That's fairly common these days. Alpine's a very good example of it, and there's even talk of going up to 7 miles, which the implications on the opening of ANWR are tremendous.
Does that mean we could actually drill outside of ANWR and get underneath there and get the oil anyway?
Well, you could do that now, Mr. Chairman, if the federal government would let you.
So they do not let us not do that?
You could do that technically, but I don't think legally you could get away with it.
Maybe that would be the solution, as opposed to Congress opening up ANWR per se, just opening up the ability to be able to drill underneath the in the formations from a different location. Maybe that ought to be the strategy in Congress, as opposed to literally opening it per se.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it would be possible to get the sweetest spot of ANWR from outside.
Okay.
I mean, unless you were to somehow drill from offshore, and there might be some real problems doing that. Okay, the next slide shows activity through the years, and it's interesting. You can see right here, right after 1960, was a spurt of drilling at Swanson River, and that's the reason why we became a state, because we showed that we had the resources, that we could be a real member of the United States. And then after that was a discoveries in Cook Inlet. All the platforms went up, and you had another spurt of activity. This shows, on the left is the number of wells permits per year, and then it died off. And then was the discovery at Prudhoe Bay and Kaparik. And you see, up to 305 wells were permitted in 1 year during that part of the activity. The crash of the oil prices brought us down to under 150 permits per year, and then a steady increase in the number of wells up to the present, where we're at second all-time records. In fact, probably for the last, since 1998, I bet you during that time period, that's the most number of wells permitted that we've seen in the state, and that includes Prudhoe and Kaparik.
Harrick times. Also on here is number of active wells we have to inspect, and that's in green, and we've just hit 4,000 wells this year, wells that we have to keep an eye on. And then numbers of reservoirs are in pink, and we are up to 100 at this time. Now, interesting, we'll take a look at how that compares with production. All the solid colors here show production, and it's broken out through areas of the state like Cook Inlet, Colville River, other North Slope fields, Prudhoe Bay. You can see this green at the very beginning. You see the increase in production due to this spurt of activity here in the Cook Inlet. And then it kind of dies off, and then, of course, Prudhoe Bay hits. And with this activity, you can see we're getting up to 2 million barrels a day at one time. And then you see the steady decline. Okay, one thing that's kind of disturbing is you see the steady decline in production. It was arrested for a bit by this Alpine and North Star development. But you can see activity's going up. And still, all that extra activity still isn't spurring production as much as it had in the past with these huge discoveries at Kuparuk and Prudhoe Bay. I mentioned before that we're an all-time high on permits. We're at last year we had an all-time high on orders that we put out. It had almost doubled from the year before.
When you say orders, what do you mean by that?
That'd be some sort of decision we'd make on a request from a party. They want pool rules, or they want a disposal injection order. They want a spacing exception. An order could be concerning a decision we'd made on an adjudication of a spat between two parties.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and orders take quite a bit of work. It takes a lot of legal writing and stuff like that.
Okay.
Annual well work actions, we're at a record in 2004. We had a high number of drilling permits, a record number of well workover permits, and a record number of other. It probably has something to do with the price of oil.
Yeah, really. It seems to me that all these indicators that you're showing us point to some really good things and to a good future for the state as far as development in our economy and so forth. And hopefully that'll parlay into more revenues, royalties for the Treasury, too. So it seems to me it's looking up. Just a matter of time, we'll see those dollars coming in.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I see room for optimism.
Right. You attribute that to what? Is there anything we can point to? Is it any bills that we passed that we could take credit for? Not that I'm seeking any pats on the back, but are there any reasons for that that you...
I'm sure it's a combination of bills and the price of oil.
Okay.
Every bit helps, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Okay, now, as far as our agency accountability, I mentioned this before. This slide here shows permit times between the time it takes between when we get a permit in and when it goes out the door. And in fiscal year 1999 through 2001, we were at 15 to 20 days, and at one time we were averaging, and this is per quarter. In one quarter, we averaged over 30 days per permit, and we felt that was unacceptable. And we did something. We did a few things, and started working on emphasizing that we needed to do to look at these permits completely, and approve them in a reasonable amount of time. And we have gotten permitting time down to less than 10 days, and it's hovering around 7 days. And at the same time, the numbers of permits, as I said before, have been increasing. And we do about a permit every day now,
good,
every working day, about 250 permits a year. So that's okay. One permit a day.
Okay.
The next two slides are our key challenges and projects. And I've gone over a few of those The big one, of course, is the first one, which is determining the impacts of major gas sales upon ultimate hydrocarbon recovery. That's a whole talk in itself, and we've already talked about it quite a bit. And that was, and then the rest of them you can look at. It just comes out of the budget book also, and you can look at that in your own time and look through it. If you have any questions or problems or concerns about any of these, feel free to give me a call.
Are there any permits, Dan, that you have denied in the course of your tenure there?
Yes, yes, Mr. Chairman, we deny some permits. Often, though, very often, we find problems with the permits, with the compliance, with compliance with regulations, or they ask us for a waiver that we don't feel can be granted, and we'll deny that part of it, and then they'll take the permit back, rework it, and give us one that is compliant. So it looks like we approved 99.5% of the permits, but I would say that probably 30% of the permits, and this is just off the top of my head, 30% of the permits require some sort of work before they're approved.
Okay. Thank you.
With that, the next two talks we've already gone through a lot of the concerns about the gas pipeline, and maybe we should not do that right now, unless you insist, Mr. Chairman.
No, that's okay.
And then the other one was talk about Cook Inlet and what to do with the platforms, and I'd love to discuss those in more detail at some other time.
Actually, I would encourage that, because we're working on legislation, as you know, to address that issue, and which is partly intended to maintain that infrastructure, because when those fields lose their useful economic life, we don't want them to be dismantled, never to again be used. We'd like to see those remain in place, and we're looking at a bill that would possibly encourage the maintenance of those facilities so we can maybe drill deeper holes and find that oil that you're talking about that represents the 96% that hasn't been found yet.
I'm not the only one that thinks this, but before we get rid of those platforms, we should have a well drilled or a hole drilled an unutilized well bore, one that, and every one of those platforms ought to be drilled another 5,000 feet deeper and go down to where the oils come from. Mm-hmm. And just see what's down there. I mean, maybe there's no permeability down there, or maybe we'll be very pleasantly surprised and open up a whole new major play in the state.
Right. Yep. We hope to encourage that.
And with that, I'm finished, Mr. Chairman.
I know it's late in the hours, and we got things to do, ladies and gentlemen, and I do appreciate your persistence and patience and so forth, given that. Are there any additional observations, any questions for Mr. Seamount? Seeing none, Dan, congratulations on your success over the last 5 years. We look forward to continue working with you, and I hope you have a good result in the House floor. I expect that to be the case, but you certainly have been well received by our group, I feel, and again, appreciate your work. Keep it up over there at the Commission. We hope to keep you real busy in the future with permit applications. You want to see a lot of oil and gas activity in this state. So with that, I'd like to wrap this thing up by announcing that our next meeting will be on the 3rd. And we're going to, where's the information here? Here it is. We're going to get into the issue of the viscous oil, which is the heavy oil in the North Slope. We want to educate the committee here, because we're moving in the direction of legislation on that issue as well. And the viscous oil represents a huge potential in the North Slope. There's literally several billion barrels of unrecoverable oil that we're moving toward being able to recover with increasing technology. So we're going to have a presentation by couple of folks from BP on that issue on Thursday, March 3rd. So we will have that meeting on that date at 5 o'clock right here, and I look forward to seeing you folks there, and thank you for participation today. With that, the meeting is adjourned at 5:54 p.m.